So I came across an article that was written by Joan Sutherland, who is in our Dharma family. You might think of her like an aunt in Boundless Way Zen. She's not actually part of our lineage, but transmitted by a teacher who is part of our lineage. And so we actually have notes by her in our koans. So when we do koans, sometimes if you offer an answer that is fitting, I may read something that Joan Sutherland wrote and is in our koan notes. So it's kind of neat. I feel this connection with her in some sort of dharmic way, even though I've never met her personally. And I want to read for you a passage out of an article that she bravely wrote entitled, "What is Enlightenment?" The Chinese have an image for how enlightening revelation is inextricable from the things of this earth. One heart mind with two gates. The first gate opens to the vastness, while the second opens toward compassionate engagement with the world. We walk through the second gate when we dedicate our lives to concern for others. We can't believe in our delusions as we did before enlightenment. They're no longer capable of binding us to their limited view of reality, but they still arise because it's part of the nature of the human heart-mind to generate them. The difference is that we see them for what they are and can even feel a warm compassion for them. We get underneath the self-centered operational realm of sorting and choosing and to sink back into the place from which all thoughts arise. It's a truer place to rest and a humbler one. There is mad discipline and insane persistence on this path, but they're in the service of something more fruitful than certainty, control, and will. They're in the service of availability. Whatever happens, you have to just keep showing up. Allow your allegiance to be turned from the habits of exile to the promise of home, naturally. Make yourself unconditionally available and trust that enlightenment will find you. Our enlightenment is continuous with the universes. The enlightening aspect of compassion includes our bright commitment to everyone's freedom from suffering. The endarkening aspect of compassion is our willingness to have our hearts broken by the world, so our hearts remain open and undefensive. As we endarken, we see that we are not only continuous with the luminous nature of the universe, but also continuous with the great broken heart of the world. We share a tenderness that is both poignant beauty and wound. The end. No, all right. So that beautiful passage, in a way, really, what is there more to say? But I find myself really interested in this topic of enlightenment that we almost never talk about in Boundless Way Zen. I don't know that I've ever given a talk about it myself. We may have mentioned awakening with the chant that we have chanted about gradual versus sudden enlightenment. But what is enlightenment? It's funny to raise this topic that in some ways may feel taboo. And there are reasons why this particular topic is a little bit taboo. if you will, in our practice, in our tradition. In some respects, any talk about enlightenment, there's a fear, I think, on the part of teachers that to talk about it may cause people to get particular ideas of what we are supposed to be. And when we have those ideas of what we are supposed to be, then we start aiming towards something outside of what we already are. And this is an error. This is a mistake. It is a sense of not being enough just as we are. And that is not enlightenment. That is getting lost in searching and in believing that we are not the truth that we seek. So there's one reason why it's kind of uncommon to talk about enlightenment. I think there's another reason, which is that even you know, teachers who have been on this path for a long, long time and who have many, many students and have been practicing for years and years, you know, still make big mistakes. You occasionally will hear the story of a teacher, you know, supposedly quote-unquote enlightened being who, you know, gets involved in some kind of scandal or financial harm to the organization or, you know, some boundary inappropriateness that causes pain and suffering. And we hear about these things and we say, well, what's the point of enlightenment then if people, you know, who are supposedly far along in this path still make mistakes? So I think there are a number of reasons why the topic has been kind of minimized. And, you know, there's some validity to those minimizations as well. Like, it's important for people not to get too caught up in trying to become something that we are not. So talk about enlightenment is in itself a bit risky. Having named those risks, let's barrel forward. This practice is not without purpose. There is real intention. When we come to sit together on the cushion, when we take out the cushion and sit, we are practicing to awaken, to be awake, to see what is in the given moment with as much clarity as we can. This is not a conceptual act. This is not about gaining control. This is not about being better than what we are. It is simply about truly seeing what we already are. And as we come to see what is, we call this awakening. We call this enlightenment. These terms could be used synonymously. They really are pointing toward the same thing. But one might think of awakening as being something that is in time. We awaken and see something and then become something else, and it's part of a story. We might say that enlightenment has no story. It is simply the nature of the universe. It's the nature of everything, and it doesn't depend on me seeing it. That storyline of, oh, I'm awake, isn't necessary or part of it. So to practice, to be awake, to set our hearts to turn toward what is, to set our hearts toward being open to things as they are, to receive ourselves. This is the heart of our practice, our intention. It's very interesting because it's an intention that is not about being different from what we are. And of course, we're so used to having intentions of being something other than what we are. So much of life is about that. So much of life is about either some form of self-improvement project or it is some form of life improvement. And of course, all these things are really good and important. And when we're sitting on the cushion, that's not what this is about. When we're walking in the Zendo, we're not trying to get anywhere. We're just walking in circles together, hearing the beautiful creaking floorboards beneath us as we step. That's it. Nowhere else to go. So we can feel that that subtle shift maybe in our intention as we come to practice. And the forms help us with that. The fact that we get up and walk in circles rather than down to CVS to get a pack of Hubba Bubba and, you know, hop in the car and drive somewhere and get a coffee. See, those all seem in our mind to be kind of linear, like they're headed somewhere. Somewhere outside of the moment that we're in. Oh, you know, in a little bit, I'm going to get to the next moment. And then I'll get the thing that makes my life a little bit better. Well, our practice is not about that. And what's interesting is that you might describe awakening as simply realizing that. Simply realizing that there's nowhere to go. That there's nothing else to become. That this really is it. And of course, it includes a very kind of close attention to awareness. Attention and awareness, really synonyms, but, you know, language is language. This awareness that is our birthright in some strange way, that manifests as all kinds of things that are not me, manifests as a cough across the room, a moving leg, a deep breath. Is the breath mine? Is it not mine? Awareness doesn't care. Awareness itself is not distinguishing between what is mine and what is not mine. Things just arise. The sound of a car. That's it. My car, someone else's car. These are all thoughts. You know, in the Buddhist terminology, we might say delusions. Just extra. The arising of labels, me, you. And of course, we live our lives in these labels, so kind of ensconced in these labels, so boxed in some sense by these labels, that they come to seem like what is most real. The label, most fundamental label that we create is the label of self and other. There is me and there is everything that is not me. And then develops the idea that everything I'm experiencing is just my perception and it's just in my head and nobody else has it. And we feel quite solitary and destitute. We can feel quite alone when we believe this narrative of our isolation. When we believe that everything that arises is just me, just in my head, my little head. And this can create a feeling like you're wearing a helmet all the time. It's this profound, real sense of separateness, of walking through the world as a separate being. Me. I. It's like being wrapped in a blanket, but not a cozy one, a muffling one, one that suffocates. So awakening is the sense that we see that those are just thoughts. That's all. No reason to make any of these thoughts go away, no need to argue with them, but just to see them as constructions of the mind. And to see that there is something functioning that is not me and mine, that is just the clinking of the radiator or breathing. Even sensation in, quote, my legs is really just sensation. And some way exists before it's been called me or mine. So there is something functioning all the time. The universe is just universing. It doesn't care what you call it. We are invited in this practice to engage intimately with that landscape that knows no labels, or that just doesn't care about them. To be awake, boundless, the vastness. Joan Sutherland calls it the vastness. Always present, does not need to be fabricated, not anything that we need to make up. It's already here, it's here. The flowing of steam and water through the pipes. Just this. It's interesting, we just don't believe it. Oh, it can't be just this. This isn't that boundless space that he's talking about. This is, St. John's Episcopal Church, and I'm sitting on a cushion, and boom, up comes the story, and we just believe it. And we go into the mind of discrimination and separateness. All fine, but just recognizing that it is the mind of discrimination and separateness. And that in some way, we are also part of some great unitary, undivided boundlessness. That is always operating. And of course, this is sudden enlightenment. The sense of everything falling away, body and mind, any sense of me, my, separateness, just vanishing into this openness that is our true nature. Quite astounding that it shows up in this way. And then in that way, and then in another way. Nothing to hold on to, no way to pin it down. Say, oh, I know what enlightenment is. Enlightenment's over at St. John's. No, it's every moment, everywhere we go. Always your birthright, always our true nature. Always the nature of all beings. Nothing excluded. And of course, there is gradual cultivation. There is this practice of entering into the forms of our lives, which are all expressions of this vastness. Going to work. Taking a walk. Going to CVS and buying some Hubba Bubba. Getting a coffee. This is the form that the vastness takes. Sipping the coffee, talking to a friend, getting stressed out. All of these things, expressions of the interconnectedness of the universe. Your broken heart over the state of the world. That's a manifestation of your great bodhisattva vow to care, to be awake. Now manifesting as care and sadness. So this encouragement not to turn enlightenment into an idea, but to just let it be your practice. There is no separateness between some idea of something remarkable and your practice right here, right now. This is it. This moment is enlightenment. No need to look outside anywhere. Just opening and letting ourselves receive what is.